Hello and welcome to Radio for Nintendo. This is episode 403. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann.
The streak continues.
Yes, I think the streak has been conquered because James is not here, but we do have Guillaume Veillette.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember before last episode what episode I skipped. I think I had the streak going on too, and that ended.
Could be, yeah. Recently expired. But filling James's seat this week, we have our special guest, Mr. Josh Hillier.
Oh, yes, they call me the streak.
Booby dad, booby dad.
That wasn't the intro I initially wrote, by the way, but oh well.
Oh, you should, if you wrote an intro, I think you should use that one also.
We're supposed to write our intros?
I always write mine. Well, in a world where radio has been taken over by corporate interest and an idea of objectivity in video gaming that does not really exist, isn't there something that we need? Freedom, perhaps? Freedom to explore Nintendo and to love Nintendo? Yes, that's what we need. And here I am today on Radio Free Nintendo, Josh Hillier, checking in. Happy to be here.
Awesome.
I'm tearing up over here.
Yeah.
Thank you. I lost my initial writing, so that was just off the brain.
That's actually the
if it sounded poorly written, that's why.
That was authentic head gold. Josh is a professional writer and a professor of writing.
Communication, actually, but part of that is screenwriting, so yeah.
Awesome. At my alma mater, Auburn University, War Eagle.
War Eagle.
And you might have heard Josh's voice on Back in My Play, where he has been a co-host, and I guess will be a guest occasionally from here on.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be on this week, so I'm making my triumphant return.
Excellent. And and you've been a guest on Player One Podcast as well.
Yeah, I was on the episode right after 400, and then you were on the week right after me. So, that was a thing for a little
Hard
while
act
there.
To follow.
Okay, so how do you get invited to those things? I've been trying,
somebody just asks you. Let's put out the call. I think Guillaume should be on Player One Podcast.
No one loves me.
I bet CJ will hear that and will do something about it when the time is right. We actually haven't had CJ on this podcast, which we really should do. We're grossly lacking in that regard. So one of these days, it'll happen.
The problem with having CJ on, though, is the video stream that he sends you with his audio. Very disturbing.
Yeah, we can disable that. We can just close our eyes.
Sure.
So anyway, we have a very packed episode for you tonight. There's some really surprising games to talk about, I think, in new business. And and then later on in the show, we're going to be recapping the Nintendo Direct about Smash Brothers for Wii U. There's a lot of stuff on there. We're not going to go through all 55 new facts they weren't all new, but all 55 things that they announced on that Direct, but we'll hit some of the highlights and talk about those and how it shapes our perception of that game a few weeks before it releases here in North America. And we're also maybe going to talk about a little editorial from another website and kind of break down some of the issues that go into that. I think Josh will be a good expert witness to have on hand for that discussion. And if time permits, listener mail, I'm not super optimistic about that, but we do have some queued up in case things go that direction. So anyway, let's jump into new business. I'll go first because I did play the newest game of the panel here this week, and that would be Shantae Pirates. I actually didn't write down the full title, so I don't know if that's exactly correct, but the new Shantae game for 3DS. It just came out today as of our recording.
And just to clarify, this is not the kickstarted Shantae game that's supposed to be coming to other platforms, right?
That's right. So there is a console Shantae game, which I guess will be Shantae 4, that's coming out on Wii U and also PS4 and Xbox One and PC, I think. Maybe 3DS? I'm not sure. Anyway, the Pirate's Curse game that I've been playing that came out today is an exclusive to 3DS, and it was co-developed between WayForward Technologies and Inti Creates, which is the team behind, of course, Azure Striker Gunvolt and Mighty No. 9 and Mega Man Zero, et cetera, et cetera. We've talked about them quite a bit lately. I don't know exactly what all they had to do with this game, but, you know, I have a complex history with Shantae. I have a lot of criticisms of this series.
You've got baggage.
Well, it's a series that I really want to like. I mean, on paper, it sounds like something that would be perfect for me. And in execution, I find it lacking in every case so far. I thought the Game Boy Color game, the original, it's on Virtual Console. You can download it for your 3DS. It's extremely ambitious. And is a technical marvel for the Game Boy Color, but just has some game design issues that I have a hard time getting around. And really the same thing for the DSiWare game. I mean, it's probably the single most impressive game ever released for DSiWare, and it looks absolutely incredible. I didn't even play it until I had a 3DS, and I still think it looks amazing, but I don't know how much fun it actually is to play. It's just, it's got some control issues and some pacing issues that I find very hard to get around, even though the sort of overall structure of it being like very light RPG elements, but definitely some kind of Metroid style exploration and level designs. There's an upgrade path for your character. There's quite a bit of platforming. It's an action game at heart, but you go into these dungeons that are a little bit Zelda-ish, and you get an item that helps you finish the dungeon, and there's a boss at the end. All these things really should work better than they do in those first two Shantae games. And this third one now that's out on 3DS, I think from Zach Miller's review, which is what convinced me to buy it, as well as the first couple hours of playing it from today, I think it addresses a lot of my issues with this series. And so far, I would say it is easily my favorite Shantae game, and is a game that I'm enjoying with really almost no reservations whatsoever so far. I think it launches very well. It gets off to a great start. It has much better pacing. It's brisk. The control is tight. The enemies seem to be balanced well, and they only take one or two hits apiece, so it's more about the placement of them rather than just having to wail on them and hope you don't get hit. The level designs are pretty sharp, and there seems to be a lot of thought put into them, and they're more compact. The game is just more dense. It doesn't take as long to get from one place to the next, which is a enormous problem with the previous Shantae games.
Yep.
Even though they're relatively short games, it just takes forever to walk anywhere. And the game, a lot of the stretches of the game just seem like, huge corridors full of enemies that you have to go through multiple times for no good reason. And, if there are warp points, they are at a very high premium and they're very difficult to unlock. So this game seems to handle all that stuff much better. And this might sound strange, but I think the game benefits greatly from the character being much smaller on the screen. So you can see, and this is actually a massive problem in the Game Boy Color game, but the character is now pretty small, and it's still detailed and looks great, vibrant, way forward, colorful art as you would hope for. But you can see so much more of the field at any given time. And that makes a huge difference in being able to avoid enemy attacks, to judge your jumps, to plot out where you want to go and how to get there. And being a 3DS game, you also have the advantage of the second screen down there, which shows a Metroid-style map if you want, or you can also open up an inventory. That touchscreen stuff is the source of really my only complaint so far, which is that there's a screen. It has three screens. There's the map, the inventory. You can only use the inventory by tapping on the screen. There's no button prompts that you can use to activate health items and power-ups and things like that, which is, I think, kind of an annoyance, but it's okay. But there's also a page for key items, and these are things, that involve the story, and it holds all your upgrades and things like that, keys. And the game flips the bottom screen over to the key items page whenever you pick up a key item, which could be anything from the equivalent of a heart container piece, which you find fairly often, to clouds of magic that you pick up after defeating certain enemies. There's lots and lots and lots of things in any given level that are considered key items. And every time you get one, it flips your interface over there and leaves it on that page, which is it's a completely useless page. I mean, it does you no good whatsoever to have that open. So I'm constantly having to reach down with my thumb, because that's the only way to do it, and page back over to the screens that are actually useful. And it's just such a basic interface thing that I don't understand how this game can be in development for as long as it has been. And no one thought that that was a problem that it seems like it would be so easy to fix. And it's a very minor annoyance, but it's just one of those things that you don't have to play the game for very long for this to come up and really tick you off. But overall, I would say this seems like a massive step in the right direction for Shantae. And it is very fun to play. It looks spectacular. The 3D effect is so, so good in this game. I mean, it's all 2D artwork. There is not a polygon to be seen here. And it's all very detailed, very lovely hand-drawn artwork. But the 3D layering is just some of the best I've seen for this kind of game. And they do some weird things, even when they bring up the, you know, like full screen height character portraits, like when characters are having a dialogue, and they bring up these really big, really nice looking character portraits. And they do things like there's the mayor of the town that you start out in. He's really fat and he has this big belly, and his belly is actually closer to your face than the rest of the artwork for his character.
That's great.
Yeah. And then there's another character with actually, she appears a lot. Risky Boots, who's the pirate enemy antagonist of the previous games. She's kind of a partner in this game, and she's traveling around and you talk to her quite a bit. She has extremely large breasts and massive cleavage, and those also are on a different plane of 3D than the rest of the artwork.
So, oh boy.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
This is definitely a way forward game.
It sure is, yes. I mean, they're in the very, you know, the first main island that you go to has a couple of bikini clad girls who are playing in the pool. It's way forward all the way, but it
artistic
plays,
consultant Zach Miller.
Yeah, but it plays better than any other way forward game that I've played. And I don't know if that's the influence of NT Creates or what, but, you know, I was a little worried about their forward output because some of their very talented people left to go make Yacht Club Games, who released Shovel Knight this year. And the way, considering the way Shovel Knight plays and how tight that level design is, you know, I had to wonder, like, I already had issues with a lot of WayForward games, but are they going to get worse now that those people are gone? And at least with this game, it seems like they are doing just fine without them. And by the way, the music is absolutely wonderful. It's all composed by the same guy who did most of the Shovel Knight soundtrack. His name's Jake Hoffman Vert. And the music, I would say, the compositions in this game are pretty similar to what you heard in Shovel Knight, except they take on more of a 16-bit aesthetic versus the 8-bit perspective of Shovel Knight. But if you like the music in Shovel Knight, and I think everybody does, I think you'll really like the music in this game too, because it has a lot of the same kind of tempo, the same attitude. It's a little bit more of an Eastern flair to it that goes along with the theme of the game. But it's really, really, really good. And this is one of the first 3DS games I played in a while where I pretty much won't play it without the music up because it's so nice. So, you know, early impressions really strong with this one. And so far, I think Zach's review has led me in the right direction. So I'm pretty pleased with it so far. I was a little concerned, but I went into it optimistic. I feel like I'm being rewarded for it so far. It's a $20 eShop game, which is on the high side,
yeah, you
know, for an eShop exclusive.
Ouch.
But it is, you know, very clearly tons of work put into this. There's so much artwork and music and level to it. It appears to be a fairly meaty game. There's six or seven or eight main islands that you go to, and each one, I would say, is probably at least an hour or two of gameplay. So I'm not really concerned about the length of it or anything like that. I think so far the price doesn't seem out of hand at all.
Yeah, because you consider it, if this was a retail release, though, it would be $40 or $35 at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it could very well be the same length. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the DSiWare Shantae was also on the pricier side. I don't think we had seen DSiWare at like $12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty short game. I think this one looks like it's going to be a good bit longer than that one. And that's even with as I said, the pace of the game is a lot faster. I mean, the DSiWare game, you know, I'm sure it had to do with the file size limits, but you were retreading the same places over and over, and it got pretty nauseating after a while. And so far, the 3DS game has not been like that at all. It's been a lot more straightforward and just doesn't take nearly as long to get where you want to go. So I'm pretty optimistic about the rest of the game. I'm enjoying it a hell of a lot so far.
Good. Yeah. Is there any reason to play the Wii U one? Aren't they pretty much the exact same game?
No. So this game isn't out on Wii U.
It's not out on anything. It's an exclusive. I don't think that they've announced when the next Shantae is going to come out, but I assume it's not going to be for a little while still.
Right.
Well, so I was looking at the latest Nintendo Force, and it had a comparison between the 3DS version of the game and the Wii U version. Supposedly, they're the same thing, except that cutscenes are different. And apparently, the Wii U version is coming out later this year.
Yeah.
Risky's Revenge, right? That's what we're talking about.
No, that's a different game.
Okay. Let me Google this, but keep going.
So Risky's Revenge is the Kickstarter game, I believe.
Okay, I could just be totally confused. Shantae's one of those series I've just never had a good handle on.
They're making two different Shantae games at the same time, so
exactly. It was confusing because I think that this game that just came out was announced maybe, or was, you know, like was the cover of the first Nintendo Force magazine, and then like it was supposed, its release was supposed to be imminent, and then it took a year and a half to come out, and in the meantime they had announced a Kickstarter for a new Shantae game, and it's kind of a wonder that it got financed at all, because a lot of people were like, well, if you guys were already working on one, and you know, like, where is it?
That is a strange thing to do. Okay, it is coming out on Wii U as well, but later this year. Shantae and the Pirate's Curse. It's the exact same game, but with the parts that you were talking about, that, you know, like with the mayor's belly kind of coming out further or whatever, if you just want to call those dialogue scenes or whatever, those parts will be in high definition on the Wii U version, apparently, from what I'm reading here.
But they won't have 3D.
Yeah, it sounds like they've done some honestly funny things with that.
They have, and I mean, you know, just even outside of the character portraits, when you're playing through the levels, the 3D is just really nice, because there's a lot of parallax. There's a lot of foreground elements that your character just walks behind. And, of course, that stuff, I mean, it still works in 2D, but it just looks a lot better in 3D. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot to be said. And clearly the game was designed for 3DS. I mean, for right now, at least, it is exclusive to that platform. So, but yeah, so Risky's Revenge, I guess, was the DSiWare game. And correct. Which you can also get on 3DS on the eShop, and that's where I played it. But yeah, this is Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, the one I've been playing today, the new one. And then Half Genie Hero is the next one.
Yeah. Oh my god.
It's confusing.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
It is. Yep. Yep. Anyway, Shantae, there's a lot of Shantae going around right now. So yeah, this one's really good, and Zach Miller gave it a 9 out of 10. Now, he's a WayForward fanboy, for what that's worth, but he's also a very experienced game reviewer, so in this case, I would agree with him so far from what I've played. It's really nice. So anyway, why don't we move on to Josh, what your first game?
Okay, well, I'll probably start with Smash Brothers for 3DS.
Sure.
Which I just have been absolutely loving that. And, you know, it's kind of fun being on a college campus that I get to play it with people periodically, you know, like besides just online. So just like in the little student area where people play games, you can go in there and get some local multiplayer games going. So that's been a really nice experience. I'm trying to main Luigi, which I don't know if that's a good idea or not, if anybody has any thoughts on that, but, I don't know. There's something about that move, his special when he just like dives out, you know, sort of like torpedo-esque.
Right.
You know, that's what his amiibo is going to look like as well. That I just find so endearing that I decided to play as him pretty much exclusively. And I can put him in the purple outfit like Waluigi.
Yeah.
And just imagine what could have been. So, right. I think it's sort of jarring for people when they see, oh man, not only is this guy playing, this old guy hanging out in here playing Smash Brothers with us, but he also is playing as, like, Waluigi, but not Waluigi. Mm-hmm. Oh dear. So, you know, sort of unsettling for all of them, I guess. But I don't know. That's one of those games that I think I've been thinking a lot about Smash lately between the Direct and everything else. And like, I think that it's so much fun by itself, like just playing like a single player, even though most people think of it as a multiplayer series. Just because there's so much content to unlock, and I'm a big sucker for unlocking things. So, you know, I'm working my way through all of the different pages of unlocks. And
what page are you on?
I'm only on page 2 right now.
Okay, so this is key. I was in the same boat as you, and I was really enjoying playing it by myself and doing the challenge boards and unlocking things. And then I got to page 3. And page 3, and Neil Ronahan talked about this too, I think, on Connectivity last week. It feels like your progress really tapers off pretty harshly once you get to that point, because a lot of the challenges on page 3 are like, finish all-star mode with every character. There's 40-something characters in the game.
Yeah,
I mean, an all-star mode takes 30 minutes to play through, even with one character. So, you know, it really becomes kind of tedious to continue to burn through these things, and the rate at which you're unlocking things will go way down. And so it starts to feel like you're just kind of, you know, did I really enjoy going through Target Blast with every single character? No, frankly, no. Yeah. I did it, and I got some kind of custom part out of it that I may never use. So, yeah, I mean, in the early parts of the game, you know, the first 5 or 10 hours of playing it, I was like, man, this is a really good single player game. I can't believe it. And then that fell off really sharply once I sort of reached that point of diminishing returns. And so now I'm mostly interested in it, I think, as a multiplayer game, and have been, you know, trying online matches with a few people.
And are there alternate ways to unlock this stuff, or are you just never going to see it?
I mean, they do have the golden hammers, the challenge board is the challenge board. So, you know, unless you want to use one of those consumable golden hammers to do it, and that's really a give up move. That's saying, I'm never going to do that. I mean, I don't want to ever do that. And so the only way, and you know, and then you have to look at the prize and say, is that a prize that I think is worth using a hammer? But otherwise, I mean, you have to do what it says if you ever want to unlock that thing. But I mean, most of them are minor prizes. That's the thing. I mean, once you've got all the levels, all the characters, all the Pokemon, you know, all the assist trophies, the rest of it is mostly cosmetic stuff. So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Okay. So how's online going for you guys?
Well, two of us are not really playing the game.
Yeah, me neither.
So. I've never been a big enough of a Smash Brothers fan to want to buy, like, I don't own two copies of the same game. If I ever bought two versions of a game, it would not be Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So I'm just waiting for the Wii U version at this point.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, pretty much.
Online has been pretty good for me, Josh. I've played with 3 or 4 different people, including like Nick Bray in Australia. I play with Greg Leahy in the UK. So I've been experimenting with some pretty long range stuff. I play with my friend TYP out in California, and they've generally been really good. We, you know, if we play for half an hour, we might have one match where things get kind of chuggy, and that could be because my bandwidth is a bit elastic, living in a college town myself, where, you know, at certain times of the day, everybody jumps on Netflix or whatever. And so,
yes,
you know, my speed goes down, but then it goes back up a few minutes later. But overall, it's been very playable, even when we're using Skype on our computers to chat throughout the whole thing. And, and you know, we're playing with items and all the stages, and I'm on random characters, and, you know, it's really fun. Now, I have not tried playing. I've played a little bit of like with anyone mode. With just random people. And that was a lot messier, I would say. Although it did work, but it was just, it would pause every now and then. And it was a little bit, you know, sometimes you felt like it was hard to do smashes because there's enough input lag over the connection that you can't really get the timing to charge up a smash to make it go off right when someone lands in front of you from a move, you know, which
exactly
is how I typically do it. So sometimes I adjust my play style and I kind of rely on the items more, or I rely on special moves that don't have to be charged up like that. But it's still, I would say, playable. But for me, I'm mostly interested in playing one-on-one, and it works pretty well with that, I found, at least with friends.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. I don't know if I've played any
like For Glory or whatever it's called, you know, with anyone essentially. I've been pretty fortunate not to have to do that so far. And most of the people I've been playing with have been in the Southeast, I think. So yeah, I've only had good experiences, which is nice though, coming from Brawl.
Yeah,
online,
which was no experience.
It's a big improvement.
Well, it's it was sort of neat though, because you could really think about what you were doing when you played Brawl online. It was sort of like playing a turn-based strategy game.
It was an artistic choice, obviously, on the part of the developer.
Yeah, we'll say that's what was going on. Maybe intelligent systems got involved or something.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I would have gotten the Wii LAN adapter to make Brawl smoother, but I wanted to respect the artistic intent of Mr. Sackler.
Exactly.
More on that later.
Yeah, that's going to be a good talk.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear it's working for you too. I mean, you know, obviously it's one of those things where it's different for different people. There's a lot of variables that go into it, but overall, it seems like a big improvement.
And I just can't downplay enough, it's just such a great thing, or overstate enough, I guess is what I mean to say, how nice it is to have this game so fully featured on a handheld, you know, like with online play. And I do get that, yes, we learned new things about the Wii U version today, and it's obviously much bigger, but we all expected that, at least I did. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, like, I'm sort of in awe of Smash for 3DS. Like, I don't know what the deal is with it, but I...
Yeah, I feel like it was way better than I thought it ever would be. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I didn't play the full-fledged game, just the demo, but I was like, wow, this is actually... Really, I mean, it's Smash Brothers, not really shrunken down, just on a portable, you know? It hasn't really been compromised.
Mm. Right.
No, not much at all.
I'm not too surprised, because Kid Icarus Uprising, I mean, say what you want about the controls, I think that in terms of content, the game was packed, and it did have online and tons of different weapons and things like that, so of course Smash Brothers is going to get the full treatment.
Yeah,
and it's nice to see that they maintain that level of consistency. And it's made by a different team, you know, working under Sakurai. But yeah, he clearly has very high standards, and I think he met them with this game. It's going to be hard to not look at the 3DS version as inferior once the Wii U version's out, especially with some of the things we learned today that we're going to talk about later. But you know, it may be inferior to the Wii U version, but I think it's superior to almost any other 3DS game in terms of just the amount of stuff in it, the crazy things you can do, and the ambition of it is striking. I mean, it's really incredible that they pulled it off.
It's really starting to make sense, though, the whole release about 6 weeks in front of the Wii U version.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
but we'll
also
get there.
Be pretty quiet about the Wii U version until this one's out there and it's sold all of the initial shipment, you know, and it's gotten the big stuff. Cause now it's got word of mouth, you know, it's cleared the early adopters. It's going to do great in the holiday season. But now they don't have people aren't going to be as interested in comparing the two versions or trying to decide between them, because they really didn't say very much about the Wii U version until today. And you could say that's a bit deceptive on their part, and I think it is, but I think it's also just smart, you know?
Yeah.
And ultimately, they are going to be fairly different games. And I think one of the smart things about their strategy is that they've proven to people now that not only is Smash Brothers on 3DS possible, but the portability of it is a true asset that a lot of people, myself included, have found has been more desirable and more appreciable than expected. And that is something that, of course, the Wii U version will not have, other than, you know, maybe off TV play with a gamepad.
They've
gotten it out there and they've let people try it for themselves and discover what there is to like about it, which is a lot, without being worried about what it doesn't have compared to the Wii U version, which is also a lot.
Yes, it really is. We now know exactly.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay. Yeah. I'm a big sucker for Street Pass stuff as well. And essentially, this is just a version of Bumper Cars, basically, where you choose an avatar or whoever, mine's Bowser, and you just slam into people you've Street Passed against. But there's something oddly fulfilling about that as well.
The presentation's nice. I mean, it's satisfying when you smack into one of the other tokens, you know.
And there's a little bit of technique to it as well, in terms of, yeah, you know, like if you knock someone into someone else, there's a certain unlock that you get for that. So it's a pretty cool thing.
Well, in another lifetime, I once reviewed a game called Beyblade, and which is in a kid's anime series about people who battle with spinning tops. And of course, it was a toy marketing ploy. But the Street Pass in Smash Brothers for 3DS is very similar to that, actually. And it has a lot of the same appeal. It's very simple, but it's fun. And it's not something that you're even allowed to play for more than about 60 seconds at a time, you know. It's like you knock those guys off, you get some coins, and then you can't really play it again until you go out and get more street passes. So it's not something that you're going to abuse and get tired of. Why don't we move on for now to what Guillaume has been playing?
Yeah, so there's this game that Miyamoto had a hand in that I was curious about. I wanted to try it for myself, but I was kind of iffy. Like, I never found it for a good price, but finally, $5 bin, I'm like, okay, I'm taking the plunge, and I'm going to make some Wii music. And so I had played, you know, any...
Sweet Wii music.
Yeah. I had never played any demo or anything like that, never rented it, never... I don't know, went to someone's house and like, hey, Wii Music. And certainly if they owned it, they probably hid it. But yeah, so finally I've experienced this title. All right, so first things first, you start the game and immediately kind of throws you into the thick of things with, you get to play a, I don't know, rousing version of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And you've got really...
the first song, Guillaume? Is that really the first song?
I think so. That's how I recall it anyway. Like it was some sort of, you know, children's, what do you call those? Like, I'm sorry.
Classic? Standard?
Lullaby,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, sure. Lullaby. That's the word I was looking for. There's lots of those in the 40 or so tracks that this game has, which is unfortunate. But yeah, so Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, you've got no idea really what you're doing. You don't see any kind of, notes, you know, like this is not Guitar Hero. You don't see your track in front of you and you're not hitting notes as they come towards you. There's nothing to indicate what you're supposed to be doing. So you basically just go at it, you know, like you shake the controller or you press buttons as you think the song should go. The result is horrible. It's atrocious.
Wii cacophony is what we used to call it. I think Garnet Lee actually coined that phrase at E3 immediately after the press conference when they first showed Wii Music.
Well,
when they showed it in its final form, not the orchestra thing in 2006.
So this is Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, a song that I know, that everyone knows, but then there were titles that I didn't grow up with, and you know, you pick a song in the list and then you start performing it, and it's just, you finish the song and you have no idea what it was supposed to sound like, you know. Like you cannot say after choosing a track and playing it, okay, now I know whatever this is.
Yeah,
like, you probably wouldn't recognize it if you heard it anywhere,
because there's no score or anything, right? It just ends and that's
right.
I wonder if the song selection, which is heavily, you know, leveraged on public domain stuff that are, you know, I wonder if the goal was to try to select songs that most people would already know, and that way playing the game would be more based on instinct, right? So instead of them having to program in some kind of visual interface to show you the rhythm or the melody, and even suggest when you might make sounds, they rely just on your feeling of how the song should go. And if you don't actually know the song, that would break down the process, right?
Right. Well, the thing is, though, they probably realize not everyone is going to know these songs, especially, like, there's a track for, like, Mute City from F-Zero. I don't think you can... you can't expect Grandpa to know how that's going
to
go.
I sing that to my daughter.
Exactly. And my God, that track is impossible to play.
It's
but
fast.
No, like they do have partition, but it's hidden by default and you have to press minus on the control. So yeah, like basically after throwing you in the thick of things, then they tell you, well, you should really follow this tutorial. And then the game throws a shit ton of text at you, way more text than is necessary. And I'm really disappointed because, you know, like Nintendo has been so good lately at localization and making good texts that are funny, that keep you interested, you know? Something like Tomodachi Life, they might say the same things over and over again, but at least, you know, the first time that you hear it, it's funny. In mm-hmm. Wii Music, it's just garbage, you know? It's just like, wow, will this game shut up? And it's
well,
not even...
Well, this was back in 2008, so... You know,
but
possibly,
even then, yeah, even yeah, back I mean, then, I don't know, Nintendo good. Was able to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And before, like, this is before Nintendo perfected their, you know, Vocaloid engine or whatever it is. So this is not voice. This is all text that you have to read. And given that the track list is mostly skewed towards 3-year-olds, I think that's a problem because you're going to have an adult to read that to the kid, or maybe the kid is just not going to care, not going to read it. And is going to do a really, really crappy version of Frère Jacques. But yeah, like way too much text. And then you go through the tutorial. The tutorial is actually kind of, well, first it's imposed on you because if you don't go through it, you're not going to have more than 5 songs that you can play. So you have to go through it, but at least it's kind of well done in that it introduces you to all the types of instruments that you're going to have to play. And as it teaches you that, it always uses the same song and different parts of that same song, but you quickly realize, oh, I messed up at the drums earlier, and then I didn't redo that part, and I just skipped ahead to the next part of the tutorial, and now it's screwing me over because that's what I'm playing the flute to, my own crappy drum track. So it's actually kind of cool when you make that realization, you know, like it's pretty well made.
Okay, so I just need some context. Were you playing this by yourself or with someone else?
I was playing it with my girlfriend, and I don't know, sometimes we're having fun. Okay. Most of the time we're just horrified.
Yeah.
And
it could probably really bring you together though in your relationship or tear you apart.
Yeah, we haven't really spoken since last night. No, seriously, like, we can't really decide if we're having fun or not. One thing is for sure, our Miis on screen are having the time of their lives. Yeah. Like, they're just, like, jamming, like, they're absolutely nice. Crappy. Like, you would think that they're on, you know, like, the first episode of the season of, like, whatever reality singing TV show, where they show all the failures, you know, like people who think they're really hot and they're really not. Well, that's us. That's our Miis. They're just like jamming, looking at each other and just like, fuck yeah, Frère Jacques, you know? and in the meantime, they're just
fuck
like,
yeah.
And they're floating in space and they're, you know, you can choose different backgrounds that make no sense. And, I actually kind of did have fun playing Frère Jacques in space, in a tango version of Frère Jacques, by
tango.
The way.
Mm.
Yeah, because we actually were starting to not suck as much. But then, and you can kind of loop your own instruments in there. Like, I mean, like the first time that you play a track, you're going to have the other instruments play automatically for you, but then you can take over these instruments, play the game, the track again, and, just make your own tracks with all the instruments. The problem is, like, a really good start at the percussions. Like, my castagnettes were just flawless. I don't know, the bagpipes were just out of this world. And, you know, I was clapping and with the rhythm. It was awesome. But then I picked up the bass, and my bass track was garbage because the bass uses the motion controls. And I don't know, I couldn't figure it out, like, why it was happening, but sometimes it would just not register when I was strumming. And I thought, well, okay, maybe I need to strum harder, and no, that didn't work. And then I tried strumming, more softly, and I was like, oh, okay, it seems to register better. And then, whoops, no, suddenly it stops. And I'm wondering, is this because my Wii remote is too old? Like, it's a Wii Motion Plus. It's not, you know, it's not 6 years old. It should still be good.
It's probably just the game.
It's probably just the game. Yeah. So it's really kind of a bummer when you're having a great time with Frère Jacques and then your baseline is garbage through no fault of your own. That's my scathing view of Wii music.
Another question about it. Is there any, like, Nintendo nostalgia thrown in there in terms of, I mean, besides, like, Mute City being in there, but, like, what about in terms of backgrounds or anything that you can do to make it hurt less while you're playing?
No, I haven't seen any. There's just Miis, basically. And okay, characters that they call the Toots, T-U-T-E-S. They're characters like they're character models that I've seen in Wii Party of all games. So I don't know. It's like they don't want to make Miis for non-human characters. So they made these things that are basically Terrence and Philip from South Park. I don't know. I don't get it. And yeah, like, there's not that many Nintendo tracks. I don't think there's anything from Mario. Oh, no, there is. Super Mario Brothers. Okay, and The Legend of Zelda. There's one track from each. There's a weird collection of popular songs, like Every Breath You Take.
Every Breath You Take. Have you played that one yet?
That's a strange choice.
Yeah, it's just weird, but you could replace the vocals, which I guess, would be the melody of the song. You're not going to have actual vocals. You're not going to get the lyrics, but you can choose any instrument that you want. And some of the instruments, quote unquote, can be, dog yelps and, cat meows, and just anything.
Or, a synth harmonica or whatever.
Yeah, beautiful. You can make it as stupid as you can possibly imagine.
And that should be more fun than this game actually is, right? Like, I so appreciate the concept behind Wii Music, and it seems like there's probably a way to make this game in which it is every bit the stupid, creative fun that I think Miyamoto was going for. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I never could get into the idea and that I never bought the game is because it just seemed like they couldn't even put together, and maybe it's actually just really ambitious, the idea that you can play any track, any instrument, that you can essentially remix and ultimately just recreate these songs with, whatever you want. And you can play off rhythm, you can play on rhythm, you can choose all these different strange styles to throw that stuff into. Like, that concept is really interesting, but the song selection is just garbage. And the motion controls really aren't responsive enough, and the game doesn't explain itself very well. You can make replay videos of your versions of these songs, but then you can't actually share them with anyone.
Yeah.
Right. So the game is just – it's really broken in some key ways that might actually tie the whole thing together and make it popular. And, because the game didn't sell very well, I don't know if they're ever going to go back to this, but I really would be totally interested in seeing Nintendo take another crack at this and revise the formula and find ways to make it appealing, especially in, in the world of Kinect and YouTubers and people, sharing things. And, of course, Fantasia is out now and Tomodachi Life. It seems like there's probably a place for a functional Wii Music to exist in today's marketplace. But the original version just seemed like a kind of a half-assed version of what they really wanted to do.
Yeah, sometimes it's been surprisingly fun, and most of the time it's just like, wow, I can't, what are we doing?
Well, let's move on to John. John, you didn't get a chance to do new business last week.
No, I did not.
You've really been devoting your time to a game that requires a lot of time
to
be devoted to it.
This week I haven't had a lot of time. Thanks to work, I haven't had a lot of time to do much of anything. But I did take a crack. You mentioned the phrase. You used a phrase that I liked on your now new business, Johnny, which is complex history. I think I would describe that I have a complex history with the Elder Scrolls franchise. So, Yeah, so
that's because you are an Elder Scroll.
I am. I embody it, body and soul. So yeah, so I started playing Skyrim. So I took a crack at it. This is a game where, in my typical fashion, I actually bought this at some point. I can't remember when. And I actually
there's probably a record of it on a previous episode.
I don't know because this is one I got it on sale. I think on Amazon for like some really cheap, probably $10 or something like that. And there have been several times, probably in the past probably year or so. I don't even know how long I've had this game, but there's been several times where I've seen a deal on Skyrim because I'm always intrigued by the Elder Scrolls series. I think I probably like what it stands for more than probably actually playing them, at least up to this point. And there's been several times where I've thought, man, you know, that's a good deal on Skyrim, and I'll walk by my shelf of games and realize that it's sitting there staring me right in the face, unplayed. So it's just sad. So finally, I took it and installed it and put it on Steam and took a crack at it. And what's cool about it is the one thing it does do. I installed on my Windows install. I put the Xbox One controller driver on there, and I use my Xbox One controller on it, and it works perfectly. Yeah, I mean, I didn't have to remap or anything. It just automatically picks it up, and the game switches over to its Xbox, kind of control mode. So I was really impressed by that. Yeah, I mean, it fixes, you know, I'm sure somebody will come in and say, no, you're wrong, because later on in the game it does this, but it seems to fix everything that is wrong with Oblivion, which I have a checkered past with, to say the least. A game that I really tried to get into across multiple platforms, multiple times, but I just never could for various reasons. You know, the way it has your skills, the way you upgrade your skills by using them over and over again and stuff like that.
Yeah, it sounds so stupid. It would be a game where you had to jump in place 1,000 times to level up your agility.
And there's so many ways to kind of screw things up. You can have your character maxed out, but if you chose the wrong skills to use it to max out with, you can't upgrade other skills that you'll need at end game. So you can really screw yourself by kind of, you know, doing it wrong, which is horrible, right? Right. Skyrim seems to get rid of that.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, to a good degree. I mean, there's still a little bit of that, but there is no pressure. For one thing, when you start out, you're not underpowered. I picked a red guard, and I just want to make him a straight-out warrior, you know, swinging a two-handed sword, killing stuff. So, but I've had no problem, you know, going through the first few missions and, you know, running a bunch of quests, you know, died very rarely. And when I did, it was just because I charged in and did something stupid. And when I could have stood back and, you know, picked off an enemy or maybe drawn one away from the pack or something like that. But the big thing is, for me, is the fact that the menus that you interact within the game are just much better. When you open up a chest, you can pretty much take everything out of the chest and equip it and, you know, unequip, anything that you have on and drop stuff all from one menu, which is amazing. You don't have to go around. There's no inventory shuffling or anything like that. It's much, much better. Overall, the map and everything like that, it's all from one central menu. It just feels a lot more cohesive to play. It gets you on your way of just kind of exploring the world instead of having to figure out, you know, not only the menu stuff, but, oh, well, you know, should I focus on, like Johnny said, jumping 1,000 times in a row to level up my character or anything like that? I mean, there's...
Well, Guillaume said that.
Okay, Guillaume. Well, there's still some parts of that. I mean, you still kind of do it that way, but there's no real pressure. Like, what happens is when you level up, say, your destruction magic, what happens now is you unlock sort of perks along the way. So, you know, you improve, but you pick specific things, and there's power moves that you can execute, which are really cool.
I think the key in Skyrim is that you can use those skills are useful to begin with. They get better when you level them up, but you don't feel like you need to do a bunch of repetitive stuff to make them useful in the first place, which I've heard is a key complaint.
Yeah.
Of the old ones. That's the thing about Skyrim. It's an enormous game. It's very deep. It's very complicated. but it's surprisingly easy to get into. I think that's part of why it's so tremendously popular, way, way beyond any of the previous games in that series, because you don't have to be like a crazy Western RPG diehard fan your entire life to pick it up and start having fun with it.
Yeah.
It's well balanced from the very beginning, and then you can choose to get deep into different aspects of it as you go through the game.
Yep. Yeah, it's incredibly easy to get into. Like, I didn't have any problems, and, you know, right from the start, I mean, it's fairly interesting right from the start. You know, there's dragons involved, and things are paced really quickly right from the start. Whereas, like, you know, in the past, it's very, like, you start off in a little village, and you go to a big city, and, you know, you just kind of walk around, and there's nothing. It takes a while to get the story going, but the story starts going right out of the gate in Skyrim, so it's good. It's much better. Like, I didn't really know what I was going to get into coming into it, but yeah. I mean, I would like to finally actually play through an Elder Scrolls game, for the love of God. So... We'll see what happens. I mean, and there's plenty of funny mods. I read a funny story on Rock Paper Shotgun about it, where a guy would turn it into a survival game with a mod called Frostfall, where it actually has you react to climate, like the way you would in the real world. So, you know, if you're out in a snowstorm, you know, you'll die quickly if you don't get near a fire, and, you know, if you're out in the cold and you hop in some water, when you come out, you'll die of, you know, hypothermia very quickly if you don't dry yourself off and stuff like that. And so it was a pretty amusing article. He just spent 5 days in Skyrim trying to survive, and he's like, day three, I'm attacked by wolves again. So yeah,
because you smell like food because you're carrying 8 pounds of cheese.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm not gonna mod it up or do anything crazy like that, but I think I'll play through it.
Right. There are mods for everything. I think turn the dragons into Barney or yeah, just crazy stuff.
Yep.
Is this how you take a break from Xenoblade?
Xenoblade, yeah. I mean, it's just I suffer from game curiosity. I'm too curious about too many games. That's my problem, right?
Yeah. It's a crippling disease.
I know how you feel.
It is.
I hear you, man. So I think you should at least try to play through the main story. I think you'll really enjoy that. And you can do that in 50, 60 hours. I mean, you can play Skyrim for much longer than that if you want to.
Yep.
But you'll get a complete satisfying experience if you just play through that story. And most of the really cool stuff – they do a good job of this, I think, is that most of the really, really cool stuff, the awesome powers that you get, the really neat bosses – are mostly along the kind of main story path. Mm-hmm. And so if you stick to that, you'll see the best stuff, and you won't feel like you're missing out too much if you don't get really, really dragged down in the side quests.
Yep.
So it's nicely done from that perspective. Yeah, I suspect that I guess at this next E3 we're going to find out about either the new Fallout or the new Elder Scrolls.
Yeah.
I think the good money's on Fallout, but at some point they will do a new version of this, and considering how much improvement they made from Oblivion to Skyrim, I'm pretty damn excited to see the next Elder Scrolls game, and not online, but the next single player one, because I think there's still a lot they could do from the combat, improving the combat and improving the user interface and making the world even more interesting, but it's already so good in Skyrim. It's exciting to think what might come next for that series.
Well, hopefully this won't be a cross-gen game, you know, as part of it, in terms of, like, really expanding the world. I think this be Xbox One, PS4, PC only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they may be waiting for those platforms to build up a little more, you know, to become a little more popular.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, if Nintendo wants to go in this direction with the next Zelda game, I am all for it. Not really the realism part of it, but this expansive kind of world,
yeah,
I'd be down for that.
It does seem like they might be leaning in that direction. We'll see how hard they lean. But the first look that we got of the Wii U game, it does look like they are going for at least that kind of really grand, cohesive overworld.
Yeah.
You know, which is part of what makes Skyrim really magical.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if they pull it off, it will make the new Zelda really magical in a way that has maybe been hinted at from time to time. Maybe Wind Waker is the best example of it. But You know, I'm excited for them to bring that sort of open world free exploration back to Zelda, because games like Skyrim, I think, are influenced by the original Zelda.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
It's, and I'm excited for Nintendo to sort of, seize that, that aspect and make it their own once again. But with the very little remaining time we have in new business, I was hoping we could circle. We've all got more games we could talk about, but, you know, most of us will be here next week. Josh probably won't be. So, Josh, you had another Nintendo game that you could talk about, and we haven't talked about it very much on RFN, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it before we wrap up this segment.
Kirby or Super Mario Land 2?
Kirby.
Okay. You guys probably haven't talked on that much about Super Mario Land 2, though, either,
well,
have you?
We have a fair bit, actually.
Oh,
yeah, because
okay.
I played it and John played it both earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, when they released it on 3DS Virtual mm-hmm. Console. That makes mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing. I'm back in my play this week, by the way, so playing that game. But yeah, I'm playing Kirby Triple Deluxe, which is one of my favorite Kirby games now. And I sort of have, well, to keep using the same terminology that's become the perhaps the name of the show, a complicated history or a complicated past with the Kirby franchise, in that I tend to like the experimental games more than the mainline games. So, mm-hmm. like, I really loved Canvas Curse. And I really liked the racing game, which I know it's bad, but there's still something really charming about it to me.
Whether it's bad is a subject of considerable debate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can see, like, I love God Hand, and I can see why people think it's a bad game. I really can, even though I think it's brilliant. And so I think it missed maybe the same thing with Kirby Air Ride. But yeah, Canvas Curse, and I love Mass Attack. Like, those are probably my two favorite Kirby games.
Mm-hmm. Mass Effect is really good.
Yes.
Mass Attack. I mean, I said Mass Effect. Mass Attack, yes, it's hard to say.
Well, you know, the thing about Kirby Mass Attack is that I got the blue ending. So it was just,
they're all basically the same.
No. So anyway, this is more of a traditional Kirby game, Triple Deluxe, in terms of, you know, just sucking up enemies, getting their abilities, that sort of thing, side-scrolling 2D platformer with some light action elements. But part of what makes it really cool, and you were talking about this a little bit with Shantae, is the multiple planes and doing that in 3D. So, mm-hmm. You know, it plays with that in some really nice ways with, so you have essentially background, middle ground, and foreground, right? And, it'll have some things in the background that will fire, different items at you that you have to dodge. And so that's all coming at the screen. Really cool effect. And then it does the whole Mutant Muds Deluxe thing, or I guess it was just Mutant Muds at the time, where you're jumping back and forth between planes by hopping on stars,
mm-hmm.
Walking behind
Zeo Drifter
things.
Zeo Drifter is going to have that also.
Oh my goodness, that game looks so good too.
Yeah. I hope they finish it.
I know, yeah.
I hope they release any game.
They're sort of in a weird spot right now at Renegade Kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, like, I love those guys, love Jules, so I hope that they, I hope that that game turns out to be everything that it should be.
Yeah, me too.
But this, I don't know, man, this Kirby game is just a lot of fun, and I think part of it is the visual presentation.
Yeah.
And you play Kirby games because you want to unlock stuff. Like, let's, you know, like, they're not games that you play for the challenge or whatever. This is not Meat Boy or, you know, even New Super Luigi U or anything like that, where it's a very challenging platformer. You know, you play it because you want to find everything in the levels and get the keychains and all that stuff. So I'm enjoying that part of it. I really am.
Yeah, and the presentation does add a lot, because the enemies have never been so expressive. Kirby himself, like, all the costumes, all the transformations that he has are just, you know, fantastic to look at, and he's always got unique animations for all of those weapons.
Yeah.
It really adds a lot to the game.
Yeah, I think so. I really do. And, you know, like, some beautiful cutscenes going on as well, you know? One thing I wanted to ask you guys about is if you've played the King DDD drum game that's included in it, and now it's been released as a solo eShop title.
I've only played, like, the first level. I think there's three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not really... I don't know. I think I may be Actually, it's almost sure after playing Wii Music, I'm rhythmically challenged.
No, and, I wouldn't let Wii Music be the judge of that.
Right. But I did not do very well.
You're no Ravi Drums, that's for sure.
Right, but who is? Let's be honest here. He's a godlike figure. A demigod,
yeah, but
I
only
suppose.
With the balance board.
Right. Yeah, that is part of it. That is part of it. What a creepy thing, the balance board, when being used with Wii Music. So, what an unnecessary thing. So, the King DDD game is just like, I don't know, it's clicking with me for some reason. And like, I think it's super smart. It's really hard though. You're right about that.
It is.
It's, and I'm a musical person. I've been in a bunch of bands over the years and all that stuff. That was what I used to try to make money doing and, didn't, like a lot of musicians. But anyway, so maybe it's just that game really does require some sort of musical background to be able to play. Like, I mean, you have to almost get into a zone in which you're not thinking about what you're doing. And so for those who haven't played the King DDD game, essentially what you're doing is you would expect this to be like an endless runner type of situation, where you're constantly moving to the right, but you actually control the speed at which you move to the right, like a platformer. And then you control how high in the air you're going to jump based on when you bounce on the drums that you use to navigate from left to right. And then when you're going to play the accent notes, essentially in midair. So there's a lot of systems going on. There's like three different things you have to keep up with: how quickly you're moving to the right, whether you're going to bounce like an average height or super high off of the drums on the ground. And then when you're going to do the claps or crashes or whatever you want to call them, the accent notes. And that's actually, it's kind of smart. Truth be told, it's sort of a deep little game that's just buried in there. So,
nice. Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the demo for Harmonite, which was similarly difficult.
Yeah,
and, yeah. Harmonite was.
There's a lot to keep track of.
I played that demo for Harmonite and said, "I'm not good enough to buy this."
Well, Harmonite at least is an endless runner, essentially. You know, like with the rhythm stuff thrown in, but you know, you're always moving forward in that game. But King DDD gives you that control, which is a really strange thing to do. I don't know if I would recommend this to anyone. I would recommend Kirby Triple Deluxe to anyone, but I don't know about King DDD, which, you know, it's interesting to me that Nintendo pulled that out and released it for $7 or whatever it is on the eShop. I'm sure there's going to be some people who download that and are amazed at how difficult it is. And there's the fighting game as well that's included as the package. That's one of the really great things about Kirby games that's, you know, very much similar to the whole Smash and Sakurai, you know, game theory of just pack in a ton of content.
I think that came from Sakurai. Mostly.
Yeah, and that makes sense, you know.
In the first place.
I love that. I really do. Tons of unlocks and multiple games to play, like with Kirby Superstar. So that game came out like right around the same time as Yoshi's New Island, right? Wasn't it just like within a month or so of that?
Yeah, they're pretty close.
And I think a lot of people just kind of skipped both of them from what I understand. Right. And I think if you skipped Kirby, you should go back and play it.
Yeah, I'm planning to at some point. I've mentioned before, I think I might get it for my niece for Christmas and play through at least part of it with her.
Yeah.
Over the Christmas break. And I'm really looking forward to that. I think it'll be she's four now, so I think it'll be something that she'll be able to pick up pretty well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think it'll be something that I will also enjoy playing with her. It's not a phonics game or something like that. So hopefully it'll be something we can both enjoy.
Yeah, I think that Kirby sort of has that Pixar level of appeal in which older people and young people can enjoy it. So that's a good choice.
So anyway, we're going to take a break now. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Smash Brothers and I guess aspect ratio and maybe some other things, time permitting. So stick around.
It's Now Playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. First up this week, we have a preview, Captain Toad Treasure Tracker by Curtis Bonds.
Dakota's been waiting for his day to come for years, nay, decades. Patience was his weapon. Now with the Mario series at its weakest, it's his time to strike. I did not write that line. It's his time to assert that fool plumber and take his rightful place as Nintendo's platformer. God, bear witness as Curtis Bond details his bloodthirsty ascension.
It was actually Nintendo platformer God. Kind of botched that line there, James.
Well, it's difficult because he doesn't jump, so he's not much of a platformer God. Just saying.
I didn't know how else to describe it, really.
Platformer.
Anything else would get unnecessarily complicated, much like your reading of this script.
Platformer neophyte. I mean, he's very new to this.
Oh, this is so bad.
Platformer disaster, like this segment. That's about a good one to go with. Collectathon. We'll call it that. Nintendo's newest Collectathon master.
Fair enough.
That'll get the good emails. So you can send your email to Johnny at. We also have a review, Shantae and the Pirate's Curse by Zach Miller. In this review, Zach displays an astounding level of maturity by admitting that, quote, the boobage in this game may be a turnoff to some. He's definitely grown as a person, and all of us on RFN are duly impressed. P.S. Don't read the comments on his review.
Yeah, it's just kind of falls back there a little bit. Let's just say he returns to some old habits.
He's true to form.
Yeah. All right, and we have a video. Of course, we have many videos on our site, but this is the video. A Tokyo Game Show tour. James Charlton and Danny Bivens brave the show floor of this year's TGS, marveling at the sights and sounds and plush toys on display. Watch as they are gripped by fear thanks to a rampaging crowd and looked at strangely as they film random Japanese people.
Hey, Japan, I know you don't have any privacy. We're going to make sure you really have
privacy. Yeah, thanks to James and Danny.
James and Danny, Japanese stalkers.
Thanks, guys. All right, and we have a review of Fantasy Life by Neil Ronahan. Neil lives the life we can only dream of, cooking meals, forging armor, and cooking some more meals and making some more armor. If this is your fantasy, you'll want to hear his description of this utopia in his review of this new 3DS RPG.
In my fantasies, I am wearing armor, but it's not full body. Like, there's some places that are exposed and there's food involved, but we're not really eating it. Mm-hmm. It's applied.
It certainly involves a cod piece, does it not?
No, that's wow. That's not necessary there.
It's pretty bold.
Yeah, it's a look that I think really resonates with a certain subculture. But like I said, we don't really eat the food, we just kind of apply it, if you know what I mean. And it's I'm really happy level 5 is making a game that speaks to me about what I'm interested in.
Yeah, my head is nodding, but inside my spirit is definitely saying no. It's definitely shaking its head back and forth.
Don't worry, level 5 gets me. And Neil gets me too, apparently, with his review of this game.
I don't know what that means, but fair enough. Fair enough.
All this and much less at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We had a Nintendo Direct today, the first in quite a while, I feel like, especially in North America, and it was all about Smash Brothers for Wii U. They had touted that they were going to announce 50 facts about Smash Brothers. Actually, we went to 55 and had a couple that were kind of unnumbered. But there were many revelations about the game, some very minor that we won't necessarily go into, but quite a few major announcements that had been rumored or leaked, or some of them were real surprises, I think. So I'll go through a few here. I've made a lot of notes. I'm not going to read all of these out loud, but I'm going to bring up a few, and I'd like to get some of your guys' reactions, because I know some of us watched the Direct and some of us didn't. So some of this information may be relatively fresh for you, but let's just talk about some of these things and you know, start to suss out our level of hype for the Wii version and how we think it will sort of satisfy our cravings for this holiday season. So the first major announcement that I saw was 8-player Smashers. Yes. Locally.
That's pretty cool.
It's an incredible thing just to see in motion, by the way. Like, if you haven't seen it, you're just hearing this, you really need to get on YouTube and take a look at the video of it.
So this is sure like is eight human players,
yes.
All in the same Wii U. Wow.
Yeah, free for all. Just absolute chaos.
So that 3DS compatibility is going to come in really handy then.
I think so, yes, because, of course, the Wii U only handles up to four Wii remotes or Pro controllers at a time. I believe the gamepad can probably be used as a fifth, and then you could have GameCube controllers, of course, fill up the remaining slots, or 3DSs. And so, that will come down to it quite a bit. And, of course, you know, as I mentioned before, the fact that you can use 3DS as a controller, although it may not be ideal for that purpose, it is something that someone may already own. Even if they don't have a Wii U, if they come over to your house and they want to try Smash Brothers on the Wii U and you don't have enough controllers, if they can bring their 3DS, then that gives them a way to jump in there without everybody having to go down to Best Buy and you know, snatch up a bunch of extra controllers.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. That's pretty innovative.
Yeah. They did confirm, by the way, that you have to have the 3DS version of Smash Brothers in order to use your 3DS as a controller, which I think is
Agree. It should be an app that
there may be a technical reason for that.
You know, like, or if you have the demo, maybe, or just, you know, I do think that stinks to make people have to have the game.
Yeah, the demo would have been a nice way to do it, but yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they could just do like a free eShop app download.
And they might.
Yeah, they certainly still could. I mean, you know, there's plenty of copies of the 3DS game out there, so it, you know, finding someone who has that game is not going to be that hard. But it all depends on your individual situation. But anyway, 8-player Smash Brothers, I think this is fantastic. It may not happen very often, but when it does, it will be a special event.
Yeah, it's good to have the option to do it. It's awesome.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, you can't do it on every level. Some levels just wouldn't be big enough. But there are, in general, they said that, you know, there are some stages on the Wii U version of the game that are considerably bigger than you could have done on the 3DS game, and those will be the ones where you can go higher than 4 players.
Right.
Including stuff like they're bringing back Hyrule Temple, the classic Melee stage that was gigantic for Melee. And often too large, even for 4 players. But I think for greater than 4, it will be ideal. And they also noted that when you're playing in online, the bigger stages will have a lower chance of coming up, which I thought was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like you could just disable them.
Yeah, I would rather do that, probably. If you're only going to be playing with 3 or 4 people.
Of course,
people.
If you're playing with friends, you can just choose the level.
Right.
But I guess if you're playing with random people... they're still in the mix, but they're less likely to come up. So that was
and so we have weird. A larger version of Final Destination as well, right?
That's Battlefield. Yeah. There's a with extra platforms and much wider. Yeah.
So kind of smart.
That looked fun. Yep. Another stage news. There's a Donkey Kong Country Returns stage, or actually it might have been Tropical Freeze. I didn't write down the name verbatim, but anyway, it's a modern Donkey Kong themed level that has multiple planes, just like in those games. So there's a foreground which looks like a normal Smash Brothers stage, but there's also a background stage that you jump into a barrel and it blasts you back there, and you can have a separate battle going on back there.
So cool.
And then you can come back to the front. So that is a really great idea. It fits perfectly in with the theme of those Donkey Kong games. And it should add a new wrinkle to Smash Brothers. I'm kind of interested to see how that plays out. That would seem like a good one for you know, really large numbers of players also.
Yeah.
Since you can sort of group up into different conflicts and then, you know, remix them throughout the battle as people move back and forth. They showed very, very briefly, they showed a stage called Gamer, and I just thought that was really funny given everything going on in the past couple of months. We don't know much about it yet. It was a very brief
glimpse. I missed the beginning of the direct, but is that based on the Game & Wario mode? Where you're trying to hide from your mom, you're playing video games in bed, and
that may very well be. I mean, I saw just a split second of it, but yeah, I think it did look kind of similar to that. But I'm not terribly familiar with the game Wario mode. I just know of it. But yeah, I suspect that may be what it is. And there's also a stage that they said they can't really. They can't really show it very well until the game is actually out, but there's a Miiverse stage that will incorporate live posts drawn from the Miiverse of this game. They appear to be mostly background stuff, I think. But yeah, so this will you know, it's live and interactive. And as people post their artwork and, you know, whatever to the Miiverse, those messages and drawings will appear in the background of this level as you're playing, which I think is such a cool idea.
And it sorts them based on which characters are in the realm. So, like, if you have Link and Kirby and whoever, it'll bring up posts about Link and Kirby. So I think that's awesome. I think that's a really great way to do it, to parse it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that level will literally look different every time you open it up. That's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, the music for that level is great, too. You know, it's all, like, Wii theme music and, you know, shop music and stuff like that. So pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fans of Kid Icarus Uprising will be glad to know that there is Palutena commentary, just like in the weird kind of back and forth dialogue style of that game. For she will comment upon every character in this game. It's actually one of Pitt's taunts. He will consult with her and say, "Hey, what's up with this guy, Wario?" Mm-hmm. And Palutena, they have recorded voice and you know, subtitles at the bottom. And there's three different characters. I didn't catch the name of the third character. It's a female character from Kid Icarus Uprising. But anyway, the three of them will have a conversation about the characters that are in that battle as the battle's going on. So the fact that they recorded that for everyone, I thought was pretty cool.
Right. Well, this is a kind of a reprise from the Smash Brothers Brawl, where you had, I think you had to do a certain thing.
With, the Metal Gear thing.
Snake. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And Otacon would brief Snake on his enemies. And
yes.
This pink extraterrestrial is blah, blah, blah. Like an alien from outer space.
Yes. It's very
you
much
know, I'm sorry. Movie. That was a terrible Snake impression.
An alien from outer space.
You get the idea.
That's better.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah, they did make reference to the codec. Yeah, it is the same idea. So this is pretty cool. Certain stages will have boss characters, and there is actually kind of a precedent for this in the 3DS game with the Mega Man stage where the Yellow Devil will show up. You know, I think there's some complaints on that level that he's kind of too big, and there's not really anywhere to stand to get away from him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Wii U levels are in general much larger. And, you know, Ridley is one of these. He had been rumored as possible playable character. He's not playable, but he is a pretty complicated stage element because Ridley will show up on this level called Pyrosphere, which is a Metroid themed level, which also has some smaller enemies as well that will show up, and you can pick them up and throw them and whatever. But Ridley will show up, and he seems to be a pretty major part of this stage. He will fight against you, but if you attack him enough, he will join your side, and he will fight on your behalf against the other players.
Right.
If you KO him, you actually get credit for a KO in the scoring at the end of the round. if certain conditions are met, he will even transform into Meta Ridley, and his attack patterns will change.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
So he is... Yep. A big part of that level. There's also Metal Face from Xenoblade will show up on the Xenoblade themed level as well, and has kind of similar conditions, it looks like. So I'm not crazy about the way Yellow Devil is handled in the Mega Man level for 3DS. I mean, I love that boss. I love the idea of it. The execution of it is a bit intrusive, I think, for that level. But I'm excited to see how these, especially in the larger levels, how they are incorporated, these boss characters.
Good stuff.
And you guys jump in anytime. If you have any comments on this stuff, please. I've just got a list here that I'm going through.
Yeah. Let's talk about Smash Tour.
Oh, yeah. Smash Tour. Yeah, I was going to get to that later. But yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. So I love Mario Party. Always have. And this looks to at least have some sort of element of that. You know, it looks to be sort of, it ties in some of the things from Smash Run on the 3DS game as well, you know, in terms of building up your stats before you go into these fights. And so, like, as you're moving along the board, you're picking up characters who then will be the characters you use when you're fighting. Mm-hmm. And you're also picking up stats. And it looks like the path is different every time, which helps. You know, it's not always, the board is basically the same, but the path in which you move around the board is different, if that makes sense to anyone. So that just seems like an incredible way to play the game with four people.
I agree.
Like, you know, if you've ever loved Mario Party and staying up really late with your friends, you know, doing a 50-round game or something like that. This is going to be incredible, it looks like.
And I was looking at it. They didn't really show any roll of the dice, I don't think. It just, like, even the board game part of it seemed to be crazy, you know, in the Smash Brothers way. Like, every icons were moving around and attacking each other, and I don't know. I couldn't really process what I was seeing.
Yeah, and they didn't go into a ton of detail about how it's played. So remains to be seen a little bit some of those details.
What about, did they say anything about online for that?
No, I'm guessing that it won't be. But, you know, it's great to see this, though, because it really does reinforce, you know, what Sakurai has maintained for a long time, which is that he really thinks of Smash Brothers as a party game. And, you know, and you, of course, you still have options that let you play it like a fighting game. But I think when you throw in a mode like this, where it's very clearly inspired by Mario Party and it shares a lot of the structure with that, but you're incorporating the fighting parts of Smash Brothers in there as well, and potentially even some of the mini game stuff that Smash Brothers already has a lot of, with the, you know, Home Run, Smash, and stuff like that. I think it's really brilliant, and it gives you a structured way to play multiplayer over a long period of time. You know, if you're going to have a bunch of people over and you're primarily there to play Smash Brothers, you know, in some of the previous games you could set up a tournament maybe, but you know, maybe that involves a lot of people waiting around for their turn, and maybe that's a little bit overtly competitive and a little bit dry of a way to do it. Now they are bringing back tournaments as well, which will also be online, but you know, I think the Smash Tour is a really cool way to say let's get together and play Smash Brothers, but this is a way for us to kind of frame the night's proceedings in a way that's not just a random string of matches. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned that well with the term structure. You know, like, that's really what it gives it. It's like organized chaos. And I think that's brilliant and something that the game has been missing.
Yeah, and
it's one of those things that, like, when I saw it, I was like, yeah, I wanted this. I didn't know I wanted it, but I wanted it.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff they announced today for the Wii U game, it feels like they're giving you a lot of different ways to organize that chaos. And they're also giving you ways to amplify the magnitude of that chaos with things like 8 players, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So
it's really embracing what Smash is all about.
The more chaotic, the better, I say.
Mm-hmm.
True.
They're adding 2-player support to lots of the mini games, the stadium stuff, classic mode, all-star mode. That is great. And you can actually,
that's probably the thing that has me most excited, just because going through that stuff by yourself is not that fun.
It's kind of tedious. So much,
yeah. So if you can unlock twice the stuff, twice as fast, with someone else and have, you know, twice the fun, thumbs up.
Yeah, and it seems like in a lot of cases those modes will be, you know, sort of part cooperative and part competitive when you're playing them with another person, because it keeps track of who's doing the most stuff and who's making the most progress. So that fits in with Nintendo's style of how they do a lot of multiplayer stuff. So I was very heartened to see that. You can also, by the way, go online with 2 players locally playing on the same system, which we've seen in Mario Kart before. But I didn't even think about putting that in Smash Brothers. I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Really is.
I really like that. And, you know, it will make it easier to set up a 4-player match. If you think about it, if you have 2 people on each end, you still only have the one connection, right? So that you only have 2 IPs that have to connect to each other. And so it should be easier to keep a stable internet connection, even though you're having a 4-player match. And that's very appealing. And there may be... You know, I may or may not get a lot of chances to use that, but it's exciting to think that maybe I will. Let's see. There's a special orders mode. I didn't understand that part very well at all.
Special orders? I don't remember what this was exactly.
It's similar to events, and events are coming back. That was one of my favorite things about Melee, actually, where they just give you these kind of different challenges, these like preset matches, you know, it says, use Fox against a giant Falco and knock him off of the, of this particular level, you know, okay. And it was a way to unlock things, but it was also just, they'd throw you into situations that you might not otherwise find yourself in. Mm-hmm. And that stuff is coming back. And the special orders seemed like kind of a different flavor of the same thing.
It is. Yeah, so, I think you're right.
But it's a way to, you know, it's also just a way to get gold coins and unlock custom parts and things like that. So there's still a whole bunch of that stuff throughout the Wii U version. The Masterpieces mode is coming back. That's the sort of virtual console demo stuff that they did.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Seems like it.
Yeah, but I didn't really get much use out of the demos on the Wii and Brawl, so
yeah,
I'm not sure. Because you're timed. And that, like, 3 minutes of Earthbound, like...
With, yeah, I know. Like,
is
I,
that
yeah,
really
that's
worth
hilarious.
Anything?
Totally useless.
Yeah, they really are demos more than anything. And in this case, at least all of the ones that were shown in the Direct are games that are already available on Wii U Virtual Console. And in fact, Smash Brothers will provide a link to the eShop where you, if you like what you played of the demo, you can then go buy the full thing. So I think this is mostly a marketing ploy for Nintendo to introduce people to the idea of Virtual Console.
Yeah.
In a similar NES Remix is kind of that to an extent. And I think it's good that they're doing that because Virtual Console, I mean, it is an awesome service for all the complaining that we do. Most of our complaining is about what's not available on it, but what is available on it. Yeah, because we love it so much. I mean, I love playing stuff on Virtual Console. So, there may not really be anything in Smash Brothers on the Masterpieces mode that I would be interested in that I haven't already played, but I'm really glad that they're bringing that back. I think it's a smart thing to do. For some people, there may be a ton of stuff on there they've never touched before. So it's cool.
Sure.
Let's see. Oh, there's voice chat when you play online. Of course, it's between friends, and it's not during the match. It's only before and after the match. Similar to
Mario
Kart.
Like
Mario
Kart 8.
But which is not fantastic, but it is certainly
it's
a lot
something.
Better than nothing.
It's pretty half-assed, though. Let's not cover it up. It's kind of half-assed compared to like everything that's been out there for 10 years.
Yeah, understood. Yeah. And I completely agree, but I am glad they're doing it because they certainly don't do it on the 3DS game. And I don't think there was any guarantee that they were going to bother with the Wii U game. And I'm glad that they are. I would rather have it than not. For me, Mario Kart is a game that I'm much more likely to play with random people. But when I play Smash Brothers online, I'm usually going to want to play with friends.
Yep, very true.
And having the voice chat makes a big difference. You know, if I don't have to have Skype open, that would be nice. So I'm really glad that they're doing it. And they also took the time to remind people that the gamepad has a microphone built into it. Yes, it does. It's nice of you to take advantage of that.
One thing we haven't mentioned, you know, and that was an especially hilarious moment. They're like, in a microphone, was the announcer for this
Direct. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up.
Boy.
Very like 1990s extreme video gaming feel.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I felt like because he would, you know, frequently just say very, very loudly certain words, certain terms, I get the feeling that maybe they were planning on adding an echo in there and then forgot in post-production. And it just sounded really crappy. I think like just add an echo and just all of a sudden it you know, it's actually more amusing. But I was just, I was watching that. I was really tempted to just turn off the sound and just look at the pictures because by the end, 50, like, I don't know, there were 50 facts. He shouted stuff
like
at 50
long.
Of them and I don't know.
After half an hour, it was a bit much, I have to say.
Yeah.
But I think it's the same announcer as in the game.
Yeah, that's what I would assume, yeah.
Yeah, and there was a lot of script for this guy to say, and he's kind of going back and forth and, you know, shifting his, like, sometimes he kind of shouts things really loudly, and then sometimes he speaks really quickly, and he's adjusting his inflection very consciously throughout the thing, but sometimes it ends up, it feels like the emphasis is getting kind of lost in the process, you know, because he's saying things way too intensely for what they actually are. And then in some cases, certain amazing facts are being sort of thrown out there in a moment where he's, I don't know, catching his breath or just trying to say something in a little, mm-hmm. you know, just to change the rhythm of it. So it's very unnatural. And of course it's intentionally unnatural. It sounds like an announcer, but it's like hearing an announcer speak for over half an hour. It's an yeah. unusual experience. And yeah, it's going to not sit well with everybody.
Yes. Yeah. To say the least, but it was an interesting decision. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was an artistic decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nintendo is having fun with this as usual, and I love them for it.
Yep, just like with Tomodachi when they did, you know, the first half of that Nintendo Direct was all done within the game. I wish they could have done the whole thing, frankly, because I think that would have been even better. But I do like that they're kind of mixing up. I mean, it's certainly at some point I feel like just watching Iwata stand up there and talk with a banana in his hand or whatever, that doesn't work for every game, and that gets old too in its own way. So I am glad that they're mixing it up for sure. I'll focus on two more things before we wrap up this Smash Brothers rundown. There is a stage creator, which I think most of us expected. I mean, it was in Brawl. They are bringing it back in the Wii U version. This time, you can use the gamepad touchscreen to freehand the levels. So you can create platforms of any shape that you want just by drawing on the screen, and then it just makes them. And I think that is fantastic. That's probably the best use of the gamepad of anything that I saw in this direct.
And between that and the kind of photo mode where you can paint over the screenshots that you take, I think that some people are just going to go nuts. Like all those people who make crazy art with the very, very limited tools that Miiverse gives them.
Right.
I can't wait to see what they do with this stuff. Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and when
I will be more of a consumer of that feature rather than a creator, but I agree. It will be interesting to see just how crazy people
And another thing that's really great about photo mode is that, first of all, you can take pictures, you know, like during the match itself and then draw on it and do all that stuff, like what Guillaume's talking about. Guillaume, sorry, I got it wrong that time. I'm a newbie, right? I'm a newbie. They also allow you to like unlock these trophies right over time, and then you use them in sort of like a photo mode as well, which is sort of a new thing. And so then you can pose them.
Set a scene.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. It's just so hilarious already. I saw a couple of the pictures that had been done, and one of them was with Ness standing with a baseball bat beside Zero Suit Samus, like while she's like on the ground, very like frightening, frightening looking scenario there. So
like a scene from a Tracy Letts play.
Yeah.
Very dark. I think that's going to be hilarious when people start drawing on this stuff and writing messages as well, because you can get outside of just what's possible within the game itself. It's going to be cool.
yeah absolutely. They certainly are going all out with some of these with some of these creative features that they're packing in there. And by the way, you'll be able to share your created levels online, but that feature is coming later. There was one of several things they announced in here that are going to be added at a later time, which gives you a sense of some of the sacrifices they're probably making in order to get this game out.
That's good, though. I mean, they're already planning to update it, so that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and there's so much in here. I mean, you're not going to be done with this game before they finish adding these features, I think.
Yep.
So there's a couple of things that they're doing to like really entice people to buy the 3DS version and the Wii U version. And one of those was new today.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. What is it, Josh?
You want me to say it? Yeah. I was setting you up. Mewtwo. So from the Pokemon series. So very cool. Mm-hmm. But that won't be until spring of 2015.
Right. Well, very cool, but depending on your point of view, I mean, we all own both platforms. So, you know, if we were, I don't know, it's not that big of a sacrifice to buy two versions, I guess. It's just, okay, well, it's just $40 or $60 more. But then, of course, they're trying to do that to make people buy Wii U's. And, that is an expensive proposition. And if I were a really big fan of Pokemon and Mewtwo, I would be kind of pissed, you know?
Well,
if all of a sudden, okay, well, you have to pay $400 to get this character.
Yep.
Have fun. Yep.
I think the idea, though, is that it's going to be DLC anyway, but it's just going to be free for the people who have both games.
Yeah.
So I hope so, but the way that they revealed it was really like, well, you get both versions, you get this character.
That would be wrong.
They led with the approach of it's free if you have both versions of the game, but I think I agree with Josh. What they didn't get into the detail of, but it's pretty easy to assume that this will also be available as a paid download if you only have one or the other version of the game. So it's an incentive and it's a reward for people who do have both versions, but I'm sure if Nintendo can make $5 off of just selling it to people who have no intention of buying the other version, they'll be happy to sell it to
you
for some price.
Well, there was not really any way to unlock, you know, like the special suit and Metroid Prime or the original Metroid without using the connectivity feature between Metroid Fusion and Metroid Prime.
Yeah, but those were
of course there was no
features compared to a playable character in a fighter
true.
Game.
True. But and also there was no download service.
Right.
But I'm just saying, yeah. Nintendo has done that in the past.
Yeah,
like locked away features that you needed, you know, two versions of a game to, or, you know,
yeah.
two entries of a series to unlock.
I think your skepticism is justified, but we shall see. There is certainly the option is there if they want to be smart about it and have this be paid DLC for other people who only have one game or the other. It seems like it would be smart for them to do that. But yeah, I mean, hey, it's exciting. I mean, we do know that now there will be at least this one DLC character that certainly
right.
opens the floodgates for more, sometime in the future, which I think is exciting in the sense that, you know, if they can do Mewtwo, maybe they can do Ice Climbers for the Wii U version. Maybe they can do, you know, whatever character you want to be in there that isn't already in there. There's at least the possibility. And they're at least open to the idea of adding more characters after the game is out, which I think for most people will be a good thing. It was positive.
And we could really argue that it's not fully featured enough, you know, like if they have DLC later
grief.
On.
I mean,
come on.
This game is an omnibus
right.
already.
Yeah, it's huge
it's
already.
Scary how much stuff is in this. So yeah, the idea that they might sell more content later on, I think you should expect it at this point. And I also, given Nintendo's track record, I'm looking forward to it because I think they've been more than fair in almost every case with the way they've handled DLC. And I think they've generally priced it very fairly and they've made the content really interesting and worthwhile. So I've never felt that Nintendo punished us for not buying the DLC, which is often the case with other companies.
Well said.
And speaking of things that happen if you buy both versions of the game, you can also get a two-disc CD soundtrack from Club Nintendo, one disc for the 3DS and one for the Wii U. And, you know, that's awesome. I mean, it's a freebie. If you're going to buy both versions anyway, like I am, then it's exciting.
Yeah, and it's all color-coordinated as well, you know, like with blue for one,
right.
red for the other. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like the Beatles, those Beatles greatest hits albums in the 90s, you know.
Okay. I didn't think of it like that, but yeah. Okay.
this is the place I go to,
the,
Josh.
Yeah, I think the 3DS game is the Abbey Road of Smash Brothers.
Yeah, well, then the Wii U version is the White Album because it seems to have pretty much
go.
Everything in there. It's
I don't
just
know.
Throw it
it's,
all at the
all,
wall and see what
it's
sticks.
It's all just a Fish album to me, so.
Okay. Yeah, well, let's not talk about their albums. So anyway, that's just a sampling of the stuff that was revealed today, but I think that covered most of the really exciting
one more
fresh
question.
Stuff.
Yeah,
anything
I have a question.
Missed?
So they did a video at the end where we see Bowser Jr., and we already knew Bowser Jr. was in the game because he's in the 3DS game. But all of a sudden, all the Koopalings are there. So what's the deal with that?
They're already in the 3DS version. They're just the alternate costumes.
Okay, well... you can tell how much I've played as Bowser Jr., which is never, and I probably never will.
Yeah.
Okay, bummer.
Yeah, well, he's a terrible character, but he's fun to play, so it's nice that you can flip him over to Wendy or Lemmy or Iggy and not hate yourself as much for playing as that character.
Yeah, I still had this grand vision of, like, this was a way that you could play, like, 8-player mode. It would be you versus, like, all of the Koopalings, but...
Well, you could do that if you had eight people. Sure. I mean, you could, everybody could choose the same character and all choose a different costume.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that will be on YouTube day one, and I'm looking forward to seeing who comes out.
Sure, I just need to make some friends now.
All right. So let's kind of summarize maybe then our thoughts. Is there anybody who feels like, did this information push you over the edge to wanting to buy this game?
Maybe. I mean, it certainly smacks me in the face just how gargantuan a game this is going to be, you know? Because up to this point, I've been kind of like, yep, it's Smash Brothers. I kind of know what Smash Brothers is all about. But in doing that, I've kind of, you know, forgotten that, holy shit, there's a ton of content in here. And I mean, it's the ultimate fan service game. Really. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's definitely got me more interested in it than I was. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been kind of in Smash denial, I think. I would say I know I would enjoy it, but I'm like, there's so much other stuff coming out, and you know, it's, I don't know, but this I'll probably wind up getting it. I mean, I'm just kidding myself is what I'm saying.
They do seem to be taking on the mantle of it being a Nintendo museum.
Yeah.
And really, at this point, kind of a video games museum, not even just limited to Nintendo. But that idea that really started with Melee and they did a lot more with Brawl, not as much on the 3DS version, but with the Wii U game, they seem to be going whole hog into that direction. You know, I mean, they said this game has three times as many trophies as the 3DS game, which already had more than any of the previous Smash Brothers games. And they're all different.
Right. And you can put them in little boxes based on the series, which I love.
That would have been way more interesting if the box itself was actually specific to, I mean, they're basically like subsets, you know, you can collect, you know, like limited runs of, you know, if you get all the Earthbound characters or all the Star Fox characters, it'll group them into a box, but the boxes all just look the same. They just look wooden trophy cases. There's nothing really special about those. So, that seemed like a kind of a half measure to me.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, be a downer. I just don't have that excitement for Smash Brothers that other people have. Like, I think maybe it's because I never had that, you know, college dorm experience of playing this game constantly with other people. And by this game, I mean Melee.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so most of my experience with Smash Brothers is single player or a little bit of co-op. So I'm excited about playing most of the single player modes co-op with the girlfriend, but I don't expect that I'm going to be sinking that much time in it, into it, but hopefully it's going to surprise me in a good way. I don't know. We'll see. I haven't been playing Mario Kart as much as I thought I would.
Yeah, me neither.
And I kind of get the feeling that maybe this is going to be the same deal, and I'm just going to be like, well, I could be playing Smash Brothers, but actually I'd rather just move on to this, you know, GBA Castlevania game.
That's a fair question, but I've always maintained that, you know, I like Mario Kart, but I don't love it the way I love Smash Brothers. And part of that is because Mario Kart is just inherently more repetitive and less creative in the way that different people play it, than Smash Brothers is. And also Mario Kart just isn't nearly as funny. I mean, it is a funny game and it's a game that, you know, you play with other people, you expect to laugh and have a good time, but it's not complete madcap hilarity.
Yeah, it's not
the way that Smash Brothers is.
It's not over
is.
The top, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, but I've had much the same sort of, you know, that's hence why I'm kind of on the fence about it right now, I've had the same experience with Mario Kart 8 where I was really hyped to get it and then it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, I kind of know what I'm going to get when I go to it, you know, and you know, it always sounds great. Oh, you're going to play with a bunch of your friends online, but I don't know. That doesn't really happen as much as, at least to me, it doesn't really happen as much as I would like, you know, when the stars don't align as much as I would like them to. So
yeah. I think the way that maybe I'll play more Smash is if we actually, you know, play together online.
Yeah.
So if we can find a way to, okay, like every Wednesday night we meet at this time and we get online and we brawl.
We should do that.
That would be good.
We really should set that
up.
Be
fun.
And have, you know, the RFN Smash League would be
that
really
would be
nice. Or the NWR Smash League, you know, just you know, that'll make it easier to find people. But I agree that we should try to set up a time, because I think probably in the end all four of us will end up getting this game, which is not the case with the 3DS one.
That's true. Right. Yep.
And Josh, I want to hear from you as well, but I'll wrap up my thoughts first, which is that for me, this Direct came at a good time because as I said before, I've mostly got my fill of the 3DS game. I want to play it when opportunities arise to do multiplayer, or when someone says, hey, let's do online. I'd be like, yeah, let's do online. But I'm not playing it every day the way I was for the first couple of weeks, and I probably won't ever go back to playing it with that much frequency. And so my hype level for the Wii U version had kind of leveled off, because I feel like, well, have I already kind of had enough Smash Brothers for this year, you know, for this generation? I mean, I've played a lot of Smash Brothers in the past few weeks, and maybe I've had enough of it. And I think this Direct was really nicely timed to say, actually, you don't know shit about Smash Brothers, because this game has way, 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 way more stuff than the 3DS one, which already has a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's different in dozens of key, like, significant ways that will – I mean, it really is a completely separate game. It obviously has the same characters, but that's about it. You know, I mean, almost everything else in it is different.
Yeah.
And it really did. It was the right re-energizing that I needed for this game right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. I mean, for every time I've been sort of like, yeah, I don't know, maybe I'll get it later on or something like that. You know, I'll see something like this and I'll be like, what the hell? Are you crazy? If there's one game you're going to own for Wii U, it's going to be Smash Brothers. I mean, it's like a tour de force. It's everything that you want out of a Nintendo game, you know, so... It's
JP said on Twitter, our friend JP Corbin said that this Direct kind of came across as like Sakurai saying, yeah, this is the last one of these I'm ever going to make. Like, I put everything into it that I could possibly think to put into it. Don't ask me to ever do this again.
It's sort of like like the great basketball player dies on the court in his last game.
Right. Yeah. It's like that time Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points and had sex with six women during the game, and then he retired immediately.
Yeah. Where else do you go from there?
I'm done. Yeah. I've accomplished everything I could possibly accomplish here.
Oh.
Josh, where are you sitting on the scale with Smash Brothers for Wii U?
I was already pretty high on it, just because I wanted to see the HD coat of paint on the 3DS game I've been playing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was thinking, you know, they had talked a lot about parity between the two versions for a while. And so I just kind of, I understood sort of where you were coming from a minute ago. Like, well, is it just going to be the same thing? And is the link mode, between the two, between the 3DS and the Wii U, going to allow me just to like upload, you know, like everything I've already done? And that'll pretty much be the extent of it. And luckily it does feel like a different enough game to be excited about it. And, you know, I'm getting the GameCube bundle, you know, the GameCube controller adapter bundle with the GameCube controller and everything. And, I'm going to use it as a way to get a bunch of people over here to play the game, you know, cause, I know a lot of people who don't love video games, but they love Nintendo franchises and they have nostalgia for playing Melee and, you know, in sort of the dorm setting. You know, as cliche as that is, like Guillaume was mentioning a minute ago. I'm super excited that there's more to it than just an HD coat of paint now that I've actually seen it. And that there's so much to unlock for the person who has to play it by himself or herself. But then there's also, so much to do in terms of like structured online stuff and then the board game mode and, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. I'm really excited.
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with Little Hall on the Upper Quad.
Yes.
that's where I got my Melee chops.
That's where you cut your teeth.
That's where I cut my teeth on Melee.
Beautiful. Yep. Beautiful.
Yeah, it was a party every day in my dorm room.
Yeah, man.
Just everybody coming to check it out. You know, everybody wanted to come play it. And that went on for months. That was a special time. It was really – those are good memories. And It's never going to be the same as that, but it could be different and as good or better.
And think of how easy, so, yeah, I know, like, the college kids these days really have it nice, though, that they can easily set up an 8-player match. You know, that's going to be so hard for all of us.
Oh, they're just playing Minecraft. They don't even know what they're missing, kids, you know.
What's a Mario?
Exactly. Okay, well, let's move on then to our final topic for this episode, because we're not going to have time for listener mail after that discussion on Smash. But there was a really interesting article, I think, yesterday posted on Giant Bomb by Patrick Klepek, a guy I respect highly and a good writer. And he was talking about a fairly obscure topic that we're not going to dwell on the details of it, but it had to do with the unusual aspect ratio of Shinji Mikami's new game, The Evil Within, which is not on a Nintendo platform, unfortunately. But he was begging the question that if you did something to remove these giant letterbox black bars that appear on when you play this game, there are ways to fix that in the PC version. he was asking whether doing that sort of violated the artistic intent of the people who made it, including Mikami, but, you know, given that it's a large studio behind a game like this, you could argue that it's from all of them. And I thought this was an odd and fascinating question. I mean, I've heard of artistic intent before, but in the context of video games, I think it's especially difficult to grapple.
Well, now with this particular game, having these letterboxes, it actually kind of, I wouldn't say interferes with gameplay, but it affects gameplay because you can't see what's at your feet, correct?
It's true. It's true.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm just laying it out there. Just.
Although, yeah, it's hard to say that the aspect ratio specifically, it contributes to that fact, but the field of view also could be adjusted. I mean, the camera zoom, it's a third person horror game like Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. And so if the camera was pulled back more, then they could show your where you're walking and your character's feet and the ceiling without changing the aspect ratio at all.
So part of the idea is that it's supposed to feel claustrophobic to some extent. And part of that is the camera angle.
Right. Well, Klepek seemed...
Supposedly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Klepek found only a brief mention in an interview somewhere where the developers said, when you can't see your feet, it really makes it, you know, more uneasy for the player because there's this element like this... these things that are hidden, or I don't know. It kind of reminded me of the old justification for the fixed cameras of the original Resident Evil games, they had similar reasoning, you know, like, oh yeah, well, the reason why you might find that you don't really, that this game controls poorly is because it makes the game more tense. Hmm. So it's kind of, I don't know, like, you want to presume that the developers are telling the truth and that was their intention all along to make this awkward scheme, but also it's very easy to think, well, they couldn't find anything better and they're trying to justify it and, like, okay, this is good enough and we're going to say this is the reason why you have to put up with this.
Yeah, and you know? It is a fact that running a game letterboxed in this way improves the performance of the game engine. All other things being equal, when you use less of the screen, the game runs better. Mm-hmm. And people on the PC, both using built-in, there are console commands on the PC version that let you change this, that are provided by the publisher, Bethesda, and the developer.
It reminds me of playing Quake on a postage stamp, basically. Back in the day.
There are also ways to mod the game or hack the game to show even more of the screen and basically go completely full screen. You could change the field of view and do different things like that. But people who are doing that are saying it drastically affects the performance of the game, which is really not a surprise, but it makes you wonder, is the main reason that they're doing this stuff just for technical reasons? And I wish that we could get to a place in video games where decisions like this are made purely for artistic reasons. And, you know, there are no technical limitations, you know, like in truth, anytime you create art, there are technical limitations. There are physical limitations of the people who made it. They just can't put in the time to do every single little thing. And so they make decisions, rational, practical decisions, to not do certain things or to do things in a certain way that makes their job easier so they can finish it. And I think that is probably the main reason here, more than artistic, although, you know, it's hard to say without having a more clear statement from the developers that we really don't have right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it used to be that the move to 16:9 would make this stuff obsolete, right? Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
But this game's running in about 2.5 to 1. So yeah. It's actually a much harsher, much wider aspect ratio than even 16:9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, doesn't really. I mean, I know they're trying to make it like film-like, so they say, but I don't know. I mean, it's kind of irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's kind of irrelevant to a degree, but I mean, like the artistic vision of it can, I guess, be whatever they say it is. You know,
well, as the artist, yeah, that is sort of your prerogative. Josh, I know you're a creative person, a writer, and I would love to hear your sort of general philosophy on things like this.
Yeah, so first of all, I'm glad that this is the discussion that is happening at all, you know, both on this podcast and Klepek writing the article. I think that it helps move the medium forward that we're thinking about it like this, you know, that we're actually thinking mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. things like aspect ratio and what it communicates and framing and, you know, that we are talking about it. I teach a film course. And so a lot of, and I'm actually thinking about sending this article to my film students. I have about 70 of them right now. And I think that some of them might really be interested in it because we spent a long time recently talking about aspect ratio and how it's changed over the years and artistic intent with aspect ratio changes and things like that. So, you know, like I like this discussion because it feels sort of like we're talking about the new Hobbit movie and like how they mess with frame rate in that film, you know, in an interesting way. I'm glad that we're talking about stuff like this. And there's sort of discussions like this with The Order 1886, as well,
yeah, which has a similar feature.
Right.
Yes. Yep.
In terms of its aspect ratio as well as its frame rate too. I think it's like it's fairly slow, intentionally to feel sort of like you're watching a dreamy like film. So in this case though, I think I don't know, you guys might not like what I think in this case, but I'm going to be honest that I do think that messing with the aspect ratio, like on the PC version, is messing with the artistic intent. I actually sort of side with Klepek on that.
Yeah, I don't even know that's the position he's taking. What I took from the article, he's more begging the questions rather than taking a really strong stance
on that. Yeah, he's
straddling the fence quite a bit in his article, I think.
Well, I'm not one who straddles fences. I very much choose a side, for better or worse. And I think that, you know, I think that if Mikami wants it to look like this, that it makes sense for the genre. But I do get that it can be frustrating sometimes, you know, like, Klepek specifically talks about like cases in which you might not have made mistakes, if you had more screen real estate. And so that's different, you know, that's different than if you're watching Cabin in the Woods or some film, you know, that might obscure part of what you're seeing in order to add some sort of confusion or mystery as to what's lurking around the corner. Right.
It doesn't. Yeah, it's like purposely putting a bad camera in place just so you can hide stuff from the player.
Right.
It's kind of it's kind of cheeseball.
I get that argument as somebody who like has studied film for a ton of years and also loves video games. Like it's, you know, it's somewhere between like, and really like, I think Klepek said this somewhere in his article that we're kind of, inventing this medium still, you know, we're still like making sense of this medium. So, mm-hmm. like, to where we can have artistic intent, and John, or it might have been Guillaume, I'm not sure which one of you mentioned this, like with the early Resident Evil games, you know, like, or like God of War,
right.
Where you don't have control of the camera, so it's framed for you, and even like the more recent 3D Mario games have been like that a little bit, like you can mess with the camera just a little bit,
to an extent,
yeah,
right.
So you have to kind of straddle this line between you want the player to see everything, from a certain, are you guys familiar with the term mise-en-scene?
Yeah, so it has to do with the you know, the way things are arranged within the frame, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's pretty much what it is, and it's a term that came from theater from like a long time ago, and, and has been applied to film over the years. So, you know, so you want to communicate a certain mise-en-scene for the player in which they see things in a certain way, but part of the fun of video games is that you have agency and you're allowed to do things. You know, it's not a film. So we have to negotiate this, and it's complicated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of where the problem comes up for me is when you sit there for a game which is not a film, trying to place the artistic rules of filmmaking onto a game, especially when they interfere with gameplay, I think is problematic.
Well, that's a good point. The fact that the player has control over things like the framing of the visuals, you know, the things that you see on the screen are directly controlled by the player. And if in a lot of games, if you don't like a particular camera angle, you just move it to the one that you do like. This was actually the basis upon which, someone like Roger Ebert proclaimed that video games were not art because you can't have artistic intent in video games. And I don't agree with him in that regard at all. But I think it's an interesting argument, and it's defensible, to a degree, the idea that because the player is sort of creating their own experience through this medium, at some point the player becomes the artist, and the authorial or the artistic intent of the people who developed the game in the first place is inherently violated by interactivity. And so I think, and again, I don't agree with Ebert that disqualifies video games as art, but I think it muddies the waters so deeply on how to even read artistic intent. I mean, I guess I disagree with you, Josh, with your premise from before on a few fronts, and maybe increasing levels of increasing, tiers of hell that we could go down, or Inception, or however you want to phrase that. But, you know, I think first off, we don't know what the artistic intent is here. Mikami hasn't really commented on it.
Right. And he's probably not going to, is what I am afraid.
And whether Mikami is the artist in question, I think is a whole other debate we could get into, because it's a group effort to make this, of course.
Sure.
Yeah, the thing is, he would determine this direction though, right? I mean, he's the director of the game. So he would determine how it's presented, I would assume.
Yes, I mean, he would probably have final say over it.
Yeah.
Yes. So just like the director of a film gets all the credit, if the film turns out beautiful or awful, even though you have a cinematographer, you know, or a director of photography who is really making a lot of those decisions.
Yeah, I can't say that the discussion, like this particular example of the black bars, really excites me, but I guess that traditionally I've always been kind of a believer in strong authorial control from the on the developer's side, because I don't really even games well games vary in terms of how much control they give the player. You know, it really depends from game to game, and even in cases where they give you a lot of options, I often just go with the default, because my thinking is, well, this is the experience that the developer had in mind, like the normal difficulty, the normal frequency of items in Worms Armageddon or Smash Brothers or whatever. So this is what I'm going to be playing. And I'm not the type of person who's going to be like going into, okay, well, I'm going to change from time to stock in Smash Brothers. Like,
I do. Violating artistic intent?
Yeah.
Because time is the default.
I don't know. I'm just saying I very rarely toy with that stuff because my thinking is, well, this developer spent probably the most time optimizing this thing. So this is probably the best experience that I can get. And,
I mean, for me, it's kind of an open question. Like, where does artistic intent end? Is it in the way that the game was created? I mean, what part of the artistic nature of a game is what the player brings to it?
Right. So that was my next point. The next level down for me is I do believe in artistic intent, but I think that ends when the game ships. I think the artist in this case is the developer, maybe as a collaborative group, but I think their control over over what the game is and over your ability to experience it, it sort of ends once they finish it and release it to the player, because at that point, the player becomes involved in the process. And so, although there may be artistic intent, number one, I don't know what it is, because they're not saying, and even if they did, can I trust that? I don't know. It may be much broader, it may be completely different than what they say. Number two, do I care? Right? Because their artistic intent is baked into the product that they have sold to me. Now it's mine. Mm-hmm. Now I do with it what I want to with it. And now maybe I create my own experience. I mean, you do this with every kind of art, but especially video games. You take out of it whatever you take out of it. And that's different for every single person. So I think the artist's responsibility, I think, largely ends at the point when they complete the work and they hand it over to someone. And now it means something to the artist. And it's fascinating to try to delve into that and figure out what it means to them, to the person who created it. But I'm just as interested in what it means to me, the person who consumes it or the person who controls it in the case of a video game.
And it's always interesting. Well, Johnny, you used a word that I was going to bring up. You said product. And that's the thing. Like, there are artistic considerations, there are technical considerations, there are also commercial considerations, and even
of course,
games that
that's always the case.
Yeah, and, you know, unless you're talking about an indie game made by one guy, you know, graphics and music and programming made by one guy, then you can be pretty sure. Okay, that's his game, but. Like in the case of, I don't know, something like Uncharted, where they want you to have this very cinematic experience and they're telling this action movie story. And, so like they kind of push you forward always, push you in the right direction and, kind of try to dictate what the player is going to be doing next, kind of, you know, like put signposts like go there. But then at some point it can all break down when, because they've decided also that, well, you can't have a, like, I don't know, 6-hour thrill ride, because people are not going to be happy paying $60 for that. So we're going to put collectibles in there. And so you've got on the one side, this movie story, but it's not a movie. It's a video game where you kind of do that. And then you're going to have like, I don't know, Drake hugging the walls of every freaking wall in a village and like looking for stuff on the ground and stealing
it. That's not
and
cinematic.
It doesn't make
you're
any
right,
goddamn
right.
sense.
Would, like, yeah. if that was part yep. of a screenplay, you know, like it would get tossed out.
Well, and I think there's a whole other question that we don't have time to get into about whether video games should be cinematic. I mean, obviously, that's something that you can go for as a developer, but does that make the game better? We made this game letterboxed because we want it to look like a horror movie. As a consumer, as a person who is interested in the art of video games, I can look at that and say, I don't really think you should be trying to make horror movies interactive. I think you should make a video game.
Right.
And I don't think cinematic is – I think it's usually a bad thing more than a good thing in video games. That's – other people will have completely different reactions to that. But – you know, for me, that's – and so if I can play a game and make it less cinematic and more enjoyable for me, I don't really care what the artist wanted.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's how much I feel like I'm a part of the experience, whether or not it's being told in movie form or not. If it's just a straight movie, then I would just watch a movie because it'd probably be done better, you know?
Yeah.
There's ways to straddle that line.
But the fact is – you know, like, you can still tell a story in a video game. Some video games are going to be more okay. They're going to be telling the story. Other games are playing through the story. But still, like, beyond that, I think that you can't really, because these games are made by so many people, you can't really, I'm not sure if you can talk about an authorial vision, you know. Again, I'm going to take Tomb Raider as an example. Like, they commissioned Rihanna Pratchett to write the story. And then, you know, in interviews, she's going to talk about the story and the character of Lara and how vulnerable she is in this reboot. And then you play the game and she auto-regenerates like freaking Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, like she had one intention, but then you had the team that made the game that had other considerations, other intentions.
And maybe
so,
her favorite part of the story was cut out for production reasons, you know?
Yep.
Without even asking mm-hmm. her. You know, maybe the terms of her contract are that she doesn't get final edit over the script.
Entirely possible.
So what her artistic intent may not even be in the game by the time you play it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like before you even picked up the controller as a player.
All right. Well, we need to wrap this up. Josh, I want to give you the final word.
I think that, like I said a minute ago, I'm just glad we're talking about it. And I don't think that this particular game is overly worthy of the discussion, you know, in this case, mm-hmm. because it's probably neither a great game, nor is it a great script or, you know, piece of cinema, if we wanted to call it, you know, if we just wanted to look at it as a story. But I think that the more we talk about this stuff, the more intelligent writing we're going to get, and ultimately the better games we'll get as a result, because people will start to figure out what's necessary and what's not necessary in order to tell a story and have an interesting game.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, thank you very much, sir. So again, we did not have time to get to listener mail this week. We will kick those forward to next time, and we'll always welcome new emails. So the address, as always, is rfn@NintendoWorldReport.com. Thank you, everyone, for writing. Please keep doing it. We look forward to catching up on some of your questions and topics. Before we go, I do want to mention that in a couple of weeks now, we have the big 5th annual NWR Telethon for Child's Play. It's going to be an all-day thing on Saturday, November 11th. Please check out our website for tons of information. The donations are open, and I do recommend donating early if you're able to, because that ensures that you won't forget, of course. It ensures that your donation will be in there by the time that we do the telethon, because the more money we raise, the longer we go, the more content we can produce. All of your favorite podcasts from NintendoWorldReport.com will be represented on there, of course.
That's November 8th, Johnny, November 8th, Saturday the 8th. You said 11th.
Oh, did I? I'm so sorry. I was thinking 8th when I said it.
Yep,
you said 11th. November 8th. Thank you, John. We're hoping to have Carl on next week to talk about this a little bit more and get you hyped up for it. But it is one of the favorite things that we do every year. It is a giant production, absolutely exhausting, absolutely thrilling and wonderful. And we truly appreciate everybody who comes out every year to support it, to interact with us, to call into the show, win prizes, contribute their questions and ideas for the topics that we're talking about. We've got some special guests planned, lots and lots of stuff going on. So please look forward to that and plan on participating. It is all for a wonderful charity. And again, hopefully we will be, we'll definitely talk about it again next week, but hopefully with Carl, who's organizing a lot of the stuff behind the scenes and can give you a lot more detail on it. So look forward to that. And there, of course, will be a link in the article for this podcast, so you can go find out more about that. And before we go, want to thank our very special guest, Josh Hillier. Josh, what can you plug, man?
Yeah, so I have a book called Train of Thought, and it's available.
I've read it.
Yeah, and Johnny read it and was kind enough to do that. And I appreciate it.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's sort of a sci-fi coming-of-age story, if you want to look at it as that. And it's a novella, so it's a pretty quick read. And I think it's mm-hmm. free right now, is something that Amazon negotiated with me. So I think it's free, with Amazon Prime subscriptions or something like that.
Yep. That's how I read it.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a thing, or it's $3. Anyway, at this point, I just want people to read it. So it's not about the money for me. I'm obviously not getting rich off of a $3 book on Amazon. And, yeah, I'm going to be on Back in My Play, which is a retro game podcast that Johnny's been on before. If you want to go back mm-hmm. and look up the Mylan's Castle episode,
yes,
which this is true. We really did it. That's the game we played that week. It was awesome.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And he did a pretty nice job of defending it, actually.
Thanks. It's a tough job.
It is a tough job. And you apparently are the person who's been appointed to do it. So out of all the people in the world.
It'll be on my gravestone.
Yeah, this man loved Mylon. So that's a thing. Back in My Play, I'll be doing that. We're going to be playing Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins. And if anybody's interested in hiring me as a writer, which I doubt that's the case after listening to me ramble about Evil Within, but if that's the case, bonusstarconsulting.com is where you can go, and I'll write for cheap at this point.
And you write for video games, right?
Correct.
You do game writing.
Yeah, actually, so I might as well mention this. A dear friend is making a game called Neon the Ninja, and it's going to be a Wii U exclusive, actually. He was approached by Nintendo, which was kind of a neat thing, because he obviously grew up loving Nintendo. He's from the same generation as us. And he asked me to come on and write some of the stuff for the game, and it's going to be really cool. It has sort of a Mega Man / Metal Gear Solid kind of vibe in terms of you choose which bosses you're going to take down. But then there's like mega stealth components going on in terms of blending in with colors of with different shades of neon. So a pretty neat game that he's making.
I will look forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely won't be out until 2015, though.
Okay, all right. But you wrote a Wii U game. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So still in the process of doing it. But yeah, it's that'll be out next year, and I'm excited about it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Josh. I really appreciate it, man.
It's a blast. You guys are awesome.
It was a good week to have you, actually. It worked out pretty well.
Yeah. But I love what you guys do, so keep it up.
Thank you very much, sir. You too.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next time. I'm sure James will return, and we will talk about more Nintendo stuff. So... see you next time. Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye. Fuck yeah, Frere Jacques.